I take it you're still abroad?
Oh, come on, you know the answer to that.
Certain cells of the network have gone rather quiet. They're not with you, by any chance?
No, I have not been hiding them. This is not an international game of sardines.
Concerning. I don't suppose you fancy returning?
No, not really.
Oh, no. I thought not. Well, then, you've driven me to it. We are simply short of minds. No amount of quiet recruitment can compensate for our sheer dearth of numbers. We shall have to recruit publicly.
Recruit real people?
Real people.
Mycroft, you know you can't trust them. They're into all sorts of strange things. High-protein yogurts, photographs of food, voting.
Yes, but at least they're replaceable.
There's so many of them.
More and more every day. It's horrifying. You can't stop them spawning. Believe me, we've tried.
Well, good luck with them, obviously. Sweden sends its regards.
It does?
No, not really.
Are you smarter than Sherlock and Mycroft Holmes? Prove it. The Game Is Now is an immersive experience from the creators of Sherlock and the team behind the Time Run Escape Rooms. The first 100 listeners can use gift code BSB10 at checkout for 10% off your booking and show the Holmes brothers what you're made of. Find out more at www.thegameisnow.com and on social media using hashtag TheGameIsNow.
You're listening to the Baker Street Babes, the internet's only all-female Sherlock Holmes podcast. Find us online at www.bakerstreetbabes.com, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and currently in your ears.
Interested in sponsoring an episode of the Baker Street Babes podcast? We're always looking for wonderful people, companies, and hobbyists to work with. Email curly at bakerstreetbabes.com for more information.
Did you know we were on Cake Boss? Yeah, we were on Cake Boss! At the annual Baker Street Babes Charity Ball at BSI Weekend, Cake Boss came and delivered us an amazing Sherlock Holmes cake. And you can now see the cake! We've been under embargo forever! Please go to www.bakerstreetbabes.com, check it out, make sure you leave like a nice little comment on their YouTube page, it's TLC UK, and we can't wait to share the episode with you later on this year.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard, they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two-two-one be mine?
Hi, welcome to the Baker Street Babes podcast. My name is Lindsay Fay, and today I am so pleased to be joined by Dr. Maria Fleischock and Tiffany Ray Knight.
Hey.
The K is silent, but I like to put it there anyway.
The Knight.
Knight. Thank you for joining us. We're very, very excited to bring you this episode because I think a lot of Sherlockians are going to be eager to hear it. There was a YouTube video that was recently, I'm not going to say leaked because the network was the folks who put it out. It was the Cake Boss people, but we were lucky enough to have a lot of really, really special things happen for the Baker Street Babes annual Daintiest Thing Under a Bonnet charity ball this year. And one of those things was being featured on an episode of Cake Boss.
Yes. Whee! Woohoo!
It was pretty awesome. So everyone might have seen by now the 4-minute clip. It's part of a full episode that will be released sometime later this year.
Yeah, so that has been creating some excitement, and we are very excited as well. For those of you who have joined us previously over the Baker Street Irregulars weekend, the Baker Street Babes have hosted for the past 6 years, I believe. Is it six? I'm losing track.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. 6 years, we have hosted a charity auction to benefit wounded soldiers in honor of Dr. John Watson, wounded in the Battle of Maywand in the Second Afghan War. And, of course, as we all know, total hottie. All kudos to Dr. John Watson. We host this charity event, a big part of it, and may I just say very, very quickly that we are always looking for Sherlockian donations of any kind, and I, Lindsay Fay, that is Lindsay Fay on Twitter, lindsay@bakerstreetbabes.com, would be very, very happy to take any Sherlockian items of note or of total insignificance that you might not want at the moment, and I will auction them for Wounded Soldiers again this coming year. But we have a theme every year. Our theme this last year, it was lovely. It was the daintiest scream on the moor. So we did sort of Hammer horror style partying. And it involves dinner. It involves toasts. It involves probably the hardest quiz of the BSI weekend.
Oh,
I think
yes.
That's what I'm gonna say. Done by Nick Margarelli. And it involves a costume competition for cosplayers and people who do Victorian garb and you know, a whole range of cosplay. And one of the big features this year was that we got to be featured on an episode of Cake Boss, which was actually amazing. And later, at the end of the episode, we can talk about that other thing where the New York Times was also there. But, you know, the Times. Like, who are the Times compared to Cake Boss? So Tiffany was involved from the very beginning of that process with Cake Boss. So now that you know a little bit about the ball, and we would love, 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 love to see you there, Tiffany, how did this nonsense and such frabjous joy come to be?
It was pretty amazing. I mean, as people saw in the clip, it was a pretty phenomenal cake. And it sort of was entirely unexpected in that. So we were approached. We were approached for the weekend because they had some interest, but they weren't sure what they wanted to do about doing a kind of Sherlock Holmes style episode. But I think they were looking for a group that would be enjoy and might want that kind of cake for their party. In this case, because we have the weekend, it's here in New York and it's close to where the Cake Boss bakery and factory actually is in Jersey. And the weekend is such a big event here in the United States. They had reached out to different groups at the weekend, including the Adventure Sisters of Sherlock Holmes, which Lindsay, I, and Maria, are you part of ASH?
No.
Okay. But Lindsay and I, who are both New York-based, are both part of. So I talked to Tamar and I talked to the ASH ladies, and I realized, we all sort of realized that that wouldn't be the best place to try to actually pitch for a cake because we weren't sure that it would get the notice that it wanted, but the ball would be an amazing place to have that.
Well, you don't really want to be like, you know, walking up to your buffet line and ladling your slightly steamy eggs onto your plate and suddenly there's this huge, you know, cake like debacle happening, you know, like right before you at just a casual sort of a brunch or something like that.
Right. Especially when everybody's, you know, hungover from the night before. So you know, maybe not the best place to do this giant unveil, and like also more people would get to appreciate it if we did it at, say, the ball setting. So I put together a package and talked to Lindsay, who Lindsay, meanwhile, is kind of thinks I've punked her at this point.
I did.
I'm sending emails that are very serious emails of, I'm pretty sure from what I understand, this is real, and Cake Bosses has some middling interest in doing an episode, and I would like to try to pitch to see if they'd be willing to make a cake for the ball. And Lindsay's like, sure. It's Christmas time. We're like slammed. She's like, absolutely. And I can like tell from the tone in her emails that she's like, yeah, like that's gonna happen.
I was like, you're really Sacha Baron Cohen, aren't you?
Right. So from that end, I was like, well, then I will do it. So I go ahead and I send the emails and I go back and forth and start adding her on the emails as well. And then at some point, we talked to them, actually spoke to them and was like, oh, it's a real person. This is real. And then did an interview. And then we had another interview that was via Skype just before the holidays while both our schedules were crazy. That was insane.
It was totally insane. But it was actually right in our wheelhouse because obviously if, to anybody who is either first listening to this podcast or for longtime listeners, like what they wanted, what the Cake Boss people were really looking for, they were like, hey, we think your Sherlock Holmes theme would be fun. Like, can you talk about Sherlock Holmes and go completely bananas about him? And that's easy for a Baker Street babe. Like, we can talk about Sherlock Holmes for days. So I think that during the interview process, it was at the wrong time, but the ball, you know, the entire fucking BSI weekend is at the wrong time. Thank you, Christopher Morley. But what they were asking us to do, we were like, oh yeah, we can talk about Sherlock Holmes for you.
At this point, we had also gone from the, this is an odd thing that they are looking for and can't quite believe, to like, we want this cake. Like,
oh yeah,
we are going to get this cake. We are going to outbid. Like, we are going to get this cake. Like, Lindsay and I have decided we will do whatever in our power to get a Sherlock Holmes cake.
It stopped being chimerical or this sort of, you know, like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And we were like, oh, that fucking cake is ours. It's in my face. It's in my face now already.
Yeah. So when we finally had dates that were confirmed and then we had it all set up and were dressed, and I think, I don't know that we ever really believed it was going to happen, probably until we were eating breakfast outside the PATH train in downtown New York at like 9, 8 in the morning. Was it some ungodly hour during?
It was ungodly. And remember all the transit was busted.
Yeah. Like all of New Jersey transit was down. You know, everything was like, and it was like super early.
Everyone was fucked trying to get to work.
Yeah, for you listeners out there, neither myself nor really Lindsay are exactly like, I wouldn't argue on myself being a morning person in any way, shape, or form. For a cake, I will get up and be out my door and have makeup on at 8 in the morning.
I've never seen Tiffany before 2-ish. I don't think anyone's seen me before around 4 o'clock in the world.
So we show up and we end up getting to do this amazing interview where we get there, they pick us up at the train station. I think we're in the van and that's like the moment that's like, oh, this is actually happening. We've been picked up. This is real. I mean, it's any...
Yeah, they had to pick us up because the public transportation was completely broken. And we're like, oh, dear.
They were picking us up and all the crew guys who were very confused.
The crew guys thought that we were part of the crew as well. It was really cute. He got on and started just spouting off about the transit, which, like, as you would do, right? Absolutely everyone.
And we're spouting off about the transit as well, and I'm sitting there, and I'm also spouting out about transit, and I also work in theater and on crews, so he's not wrong in that I, too, do, in fact, work in film and TV and
I was an actor for 10 years, so, you know.
Like. So we have that vibe. So the poor guy, and we all have our coats bundled up and everything else and don't really look like humans and just small little piles of blankets. So, like, he doesn't really think anything of it until finally at some point turned and looked at me and was like, oh, my God, you're not Sarah. And behind the wheel is he's like, yeah, that's definitely our
client.
And the poor guy is like gone like the shade of white. And I was like, dude, it's fine. We both work in the industry. Like, calm down.
I was like, you want to see my equity card, bro? You're cool. Like,
I have IA. It's great. I'm union. We're both union. So at that point, we show up. And the other cool thing was immediately upon us walking in, we see, because it's really adorable and makes absolute sense for a bakery, but it's pretty epic that there's a lovely 221B Baker Street sign right in their doors. Because
it was,
of course,
such a good omen.
And you knew that it was going to work out, because when you walk into the Cake Boss Factory and the first thing you see is Baker Street and it's the Baker Street sign, like, you're like, oh, great, this is amazing. Not only are we in this amazing cake factory, but we're immediately greeted by Sherlock Holmes vibes. So from there, we got to come in. They sat us down. We went over all of the details. We got to pitch them some of our cake ideas. They gave us back some ideas that they were also thinking of. And we knew that we weren't going to have really, like, any idea of what it was going to be until we actually got to the ball, because obviously they take some ideas that you might have and they take things that they want to do, and then, you know, you don't get the unveiling because they have all artistic license, because they know what they're capable of and know what's really going to be like amazing and what would make sense for that setting.
And I thought one of the coolest parts of that when we were consulting with them actually was when, because we'd given some thought to it before, when once we got obsessed with the cake. It was now the cake in like capital T, capital C in Tiffany and my head. It was no longer, oh, maybe we'll be on Cake Boss. It was like, no, this is the cake and we will have it. What flavor profile we wanted was like a really fun discussion, because we were coming up with all this stuff. Like, what did we tell them, Tiff? Like smoky notes,
like I think there was
cigar ash, that sort of thing. Like if you did an ashy sort of like a tea, which would be very weird for a cake, but if you do things subtly, you can still pull stuff like that off. We talked about tea, obviously. We talked about like brandy, like, in the
from spices from India, spices from like the Middle East and Afghan, to like in to get that vibe from Dr. Watson's like time spent over there. That was a lot of fun. It was interesting because they had wanted us going in to come and bring ideas to them, with the flavor palette, with designs, with details about Sherlock Holmes, because as you might have seen, we don't want to spoil like as much as now you can go look at the clips, so you know we won't spoil every little detail, but you know, it was very clear that they wanted to know and make sure that they had, you know, some truth in what we were as well, like we could bring to the table as knowledgeable Sherlockians.
They really cared about the verisimilitude of all of it. They wanted to know, like, what would a Sherlock Holmes cake taste like? And it was so much fun to be able to come up with that and just to say these are the really essential elements of what they do every day and how they live and the kinds of food that they encounter. And Tiffany and I both, I think it's fair to say we both really enjoy eating, so and making things to eat. So that was stupid fun.
Yeah, the idea of coming up with what does Sherlock Holmes, you know.
He talked about his fascination with honeybees. I mean, it was just too much fun.
Yes, because that did end up playing a huge part in it. But so it was brilliant from that end. And then the actual design, there were some things that we took. You know, it was a choice between there is the general Sherlock Holmes, which is what they ended up going with because they wanted, you know, that iconic look, and something that's recognizable across the, you know, you immediately see it and you know what this is. Although I will say it was very sweet. One of the things that if you look at the clip and that you'll see, I'm sure later down the line as well, is Lindsay and I, because the theme was Hounds of the Baskerville, one of our ideas that we had that wasn't as much what they were going with, but that we were very dedicated to at some point, was the idea of a glowing hound, or just glowing, generally speaking. We were pretty stoked about the idea of something on the cake.
Dude, like, we were off our gourds about fire glowing on the cake, glowing anything. We were like,
think cakes can glow, right? And the poor cake people are like, and we're like, no, but glowing. And
no, but glowing. They're like, no, can we talk about, you know, like, what kind of frosting? We're like, I don't know, could frosting glow?
It was like, Sherlock Holmes, like, what are the iconic things about what makes, you know, what is his profile and who is Sherlock Holmes? And we're like, Sherlock Holmes is great. Also, glowing frosting. So
we were so dumb. It was so much fun.
So for the listeners out there, I work with Radio City at Christmas time. So I had also maybe been away from Radio City for maybe a day when we did that interview, which means I had been working straight like 6 shows a day for maybe 3 weeks at that point and hadn't really breathed and had like family visiting for the holidays. So by the time we got there, like, I really
we were out of our minds.
We were so crazy. Fun. Like, between the ball prep and everything else, and we're like, sure, we're going to do this amazing interview and be completely coherent. I was the most incoherent individual humanly possible.
Meanwhile, the New York Times is also trying to talk to us, and we're like, yeah, New York Times, fine. We've got this cake
news organization as well. There was that, too. yeah, there was a lot of media going on. We kept having more and more people just reaching out. So we're like, sure, here, let's just make a spreadsheet of all of these lovely media people. So needless to say, long tangent, what was very sweet was that when they did unveil the cake, one of the things, because we had gone through iconic ideas, was, you know, magnifying glasses and the pipe. And I still have the pipe hidden somewhere in the back of a fridge. But they made the pipe glow, which I thought was this wonderful little tidbit that they were like, it was like, oh, cool. You definitely threw that in there for us. Like, the pipe is on fire.
God, and heal us.
Done. And, like, that was so sweet of them, because at the end of the day, like, I mean, we were really ecstatic about glowing, but, like, you don't have to make it glow.
No, you don't have to, but, I mean...
They did.
They did. The pipe was really cool. So was the whole cake.
Yeah, the magnifying glass with the sugar, you know, the glass. There was the iconic magnifying glass. There was the pipe with the glow on it, and it was just... He looks like Sherlock Holmes, and he doesn't... The greatest thing about it, okay, we shot the consultation session, essentially. And then there was a bunch more stuff that we had to do to create this episode, because as you can imagine, having seen reality television before, I think everyone, there are all these moments where you're just a talking head, right? And you basically need to say, they're like, are you excited about this? What do you think it's going to look like? And so... I don't think anything really major to do with the cake happened in the interim of the consultation and the ball, other than there were some logistical things that you don't think about, like, oh, we have to visit the space. How big a cake can fit through this door?
I forgot entirely about that whole situation.
Yeah, so like they basically had to do some engineering to they had to meet up with us. There were, you know, all these appointments, like, hey, we need to go into this space, and where are you going to want this cake, and where are we going to wheel it, and will it fit in the elevator? Which was a really wise question. So if you're planning on starting your own reality television show and it has anything to do with large cakes, then just bear that in mind.
It's true, especially here in New York, where the elevators can be non-existent or very, very tiny. So if you're having to bring it upstairs, it's a challenge. That was fascinating. And then trying to even find the space in the space to, like, hide it and do the unveiling and wheel it in was a whole process. I mean, suddenly, you know, it went from doing the ball, which is great, but, like, at the same time, not necessarily having to think, like, where are people going to sit and how to make sure if somebody doesn't want to be on camera, like, where, therefore, we have to have tables set aside that are, you know, further away from the line of sight. And
then you're being called away continually, or not really continually, but for a period of time, because they need you to sit down and be a talking head and be like, how do you feel about this cake right now? How's the event coming? Like, you know, like, any snags, what's happening with the event, and where are you at with where the cake's at? Are you stoked?
Yeah. So that was a fascinating different experience. But, I mean, it was definitely worth it for when you got to the ball and they unveiled it, and the amazing, I mean, the look on people's faces and our faces. I mean, those expressions that people keep screen grabbing, Maria.
They're beautiful. But they're, like, so delightful and so, like, honest joy. Like, it's so rare to, like, capture this.
But
captured it.
I mean, the faces Lindsay and I were making were pretty, I mean, they were definitely joy.
They were true.
they were true. And they're also, like, you're exhausted.
Yeah.
But, like, the event is happening. Nobody's died yet. Right? So it's like, it's kind of like,
it feels like every year, yes, I'm like, has anyone died yet?
Like, okay. It's, you know, the event's happening, people are happy at the bowl, like, stuff's going well. And the cake's about to enter. So that's the faces you're making. Like, it's relief, it's exhaustion, and it's excitement, and it's just pure joy.
Well, delirium.
Yeah.
Lindsay and I definitely, we did not, like, we were just as surprised as everyone else. Like, they, you know, even with the unveiling, like, even though we had to give them the spaces and help them, I mean, we basically stage managed the room into, you know, making sure that everything went smoothly. I mean, everything you see there when they unveiled it was the first time we did it. Like, it was totally hidden from us. You know, that was a complete surprise. So, you know.
Yeah, all of that is really genuine. And we had no hint of anything. We had the consultations and they had asked us certain things. There were follow-up questions. Yes, there were questions of how do we bring this inside? You know, we went back and forth with them quite a bit. But and there was a lot of footage that's never going to end up on screen, as there is with any time you do a TV or a film shoot. But when you see that unveiling of the cake, I mean, we are basically like floating about 3 feet off the ground because it was just so fun to see a cake that insane.
Yes.
So should we talk? I don't know. We should talk about the reactions and everything that people had to it. But like that cake, guys, it was great. It was so canonically accurate. Like, they didn't take any one particular. They didn't do Robert Downey's Sherlock Holmes. They didn't do a Cumberbatch Sherlock. And we had specifically said, we want this to be a Sherlock Holmes cake. Like, that is what the ball is doing out of the Baskervilles this year. It's Hammer Horror, sure. But, like, we are about all Holmes is good Holmes. So let's do Holmes. Let's do Holmes as he is thought of in every nation, you know, across the planet. And they did such a great job.
One of the perks about, you know, the ball and about Cake Boss and being able to do it was going in, it was knowing that the cake that we wanted was something that regardless of what version you're looking at and regardless of who you are or what language you speak or anything else, you can see it and there can be hints tied in that you know that is there for everyone. You know, I mean, the nose, the coat, the pipe, the magnifying glass, the hair color, the stubble, like, regardless.
The lust of him is sitting on a book. Like,
right.
Exactly. On a Sherlock Holmes book. And the Deer Stalker. So, like, it's universally recognizable. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no question about who this cake is supposed to represent.
I forgot we had been very dedicated in having the canon there as well.
Yeah.
That was something we had decided. And that they delivered, too, was that it was, like, if you're going to have Sherlock Holmes and you're going to take it, you know, having the canon as part of this iconic once-in-a-lifetime chance to have this Sherlock Holmes cake that's going to be done for this show.
People are going to see it who aren't Sherlock Holmes fans, and if people are going to see it who are Cake Boss fans, which is amazing and wonderful, and Cake Boss is so much fun to watch. So, like, but all of those people, even if you have never seen, you know, CBS Elementary or what have you, even if you've never seen a Basil Rathbone film, you're still going to look at this cake and say, oh, that's that detective in the funny hat. You know?
So, Maria, from your perspective,
yes.
Once the cake was wheeled out, and from your outside perspective, you were aware that all the Cake Boss stuff was happening, but you weren't as
involved in the process.
Involved in it. From your outside perspective, that who was there, how did you see the whole, you and like people around you see the whole evening and like the unveiling and what was going on?
I think what's interesting is that even though like they were filming and people were there, like there were cameras and all of this and like cables everywhere, like it didn't matter the moment the cake was wheeled out. Like it just didn't matter anymore because there was this amazing cake and everyone was just like waiting, you know, to get a glimpse and to get close to it and then to taste it once it was cut. And I think that was the thing, is that the people in the room, like, no matter if they were, like, the New York Times or Voice of America or Cake Boss, they were all part of this, of these, like, these people in the room being fascinated by this cake. So I think that was just, you know, this moment of like, as you said, like, joy. I think, like, one of the moments that they actually captured is Lindsay literally, like, if she had worn pearls, you would have been clutching your pearls. Like,
clutching them.
You're like doing the gesture. It's so beautiful.
No, I do that. Like, I automatically do that. It's like, I have no control over it. But if something really, really excites me, I absolutely clutch my pearls. It's the mannerism that I was born this way. I am at heart a Southern lady. And,
and man, you clutch those pearls. No, it was so, like, so great. And it's so beautiful because I think a lot of people who wanted to be there couldn't be there. So for them to actually kind of, you know, have this experience of being in the room with us now because it's filmed, it's just great. You know, just thinking of, like, our friends who couldn't be there. And who couldn't taste the cake and who heard so much about it. We couldn't show it because, you know, we weren't allowed to because there was no official clip on, you know, on the internet yet.
Yeah.
Until
now.
So it's
and
it's
all the
so
people
great,
too who are Sherlockians who contribute to the ball, who make things for us, for us to sell.
Exactly. Right. So it's just great to, like, have the ball itself, just, you know, this, and also to see, like, how much work went into it. If you just look at, you know, what the room looks like, you know, what people are doing, what people are wearing, like, all the cosplays, etc. Like, it's so great to have all of this captured, because we never have enough time to do that kind of, you know, recording for ourselves, right? Like, we have a few pictures. But this special, like, this one weekend or this specific ball, where we had so many different media there, and then, of course, you know, like, the show itself, it's just, like, I think for us who were there, it's like this amazing souvenir. Like, of course, Tiff, you've still got, you know, you've got the pipe, but for us, it's like, now we can, like,
the pipe, we're going to sell the pipe. I think we decided we were gonna sell
it. We auctioned it, didn't we?
Yes,
yeah,
we already, yeah.
Yes.
The magnifying glass I saw.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
Perfect. So it's like, you know, it's like a souvenir and something to remember the ball by, like, half a year after it actually happened. So I think, like, for the people who were there, it's amazing, but also for the people who weren't, because they can kind of, you know, get a glimpse as to what we were actually doing during the ball. So I think it's you know, it's just for us, like, apart from us having been lucky enough to actually taste the cake. Like, there's an additional plus for us to be, like, being able to relive this. And then maybe also, like, see you guys, you know, in the planning process. Like, I can't wait to see the actual, like, the full episode, just to see, like, what was happening behind the scenes. And
the I'm going to get sappy here for just a second, but all the Sherlock Holmes gatherings are about love and friendship and cracking up and being ridiculous. And they're about affection. And especially during the BSI weekend, a major, major weekend like that, or during 221B Con as well, or, you know, Seattle Sherlock Con, or any other one, Sherlock Holmes Society of London annual dinner. It's about people who don't get to see each other very often, who share a love of each other and of the same thing. And in my life, food is a big part of that. Sharing food is a major, major aspect of those relationships, making food for somebody or, you know, like, just having them into your living room for coffee cake is a really emotionally resonant thing for me. And it was really special to be able to go in and consult with these Cake Boss people who were lovely, like, just lovely to a person to work with. Absolutely just charming people. And to say, this is what Sherlockians would like. And these are the sort of Easter eggs hidden in the cake that we think that they would really enjoy regarding the cake flavors, for instance, is a really good example. And we told them all of this and they delivered so hardcore and the cake was so good and so beautiful. It was really neat to be able to share that experience of having something special to eat with a bunch of Sherlockians, because we're generally in these ballroom sort of settings where you're getting, like, a pasta dish, or you're getting a prime rib dish. If you're at, you know, some of these events, maybe you're getting a fish, but it's all very sort of, you know, it's a prefix dining situation, or it's generally in a pub. If that is, you know, if it's a more casual sort of a thing. So Sherlockians gathering around a love of food is not something that is normally really, like, a part of the weekend in any way. I think it's fair to say that all the food is good at our events, but it's that kind of dining, you know, where you're going to go to a club space and you're going to eat what they serve you. But this was something that people worked exquisitely hard on to make beautiful and to make really resonant for us. And I think that that's amazing.
That's true. And also just the fact that, I mean, of course, like, it hurt to see the cake cut because it was like, it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. Oh my God. But then, like, once we got to actually taste it, like, there was a next level of beautiful because it just tasted amazing. I think you will
agree.
That
shit was worth it.
Like, that was the best cake I've ever eaten. Like, that was amazing cake. Like,
that actually shocked me. And I want to shout out to the Cake Boss
totally.
Folks, because I have eaten a lot of things, and it's New York. There's pretty, you know, high standards for desserts in New York City. And oh my God, I expected the cake to be beautiful. I frankly did not. I expected it to be good. I didn't expect it to be probably the best cake I've ever had, but I am saying it is one of the best sheet cake style cakes that I have ever had. Like, it was fantastic.
It's absolutely true. If you live in the city, here we're doing your promotion. Hi, everybody. If you live in the city, oh my God, and you want like an explosion of flavor on that kind of cake, like, I am with Lindsay here. You know, I've traveled. I've eaten a lot of cake. There's a lot of amazing cake. And you were expecting a glorious, beautiful cake. And I was expecting, like, probably good flavoring in the cake, right? Like, you expect good flavor, but you're also aware that, you know, you're going to get a beautiful cake. And therefore, you know, you're probably going to have to give away a certain amount of, like, richness in
the act. Yes, like, it's a trade-off.
Right? Like, I mean, there are types of cake that you have, but, like, a sheet cake with fondant on it is probably not going to be, you know, the equivalent of, like, a chocolate mousse cake that's six layers deep. Let me tell you, like, the flavor was immediate. Like, it was like, oh, great. Can I have six more slices now? Because, yeah. I mean, it was like having honeycomb in your mouth that wasn't too sweet and flavorful and rich and soft and like just immediately sent you to like having a cup of tea on your Sussex cottage on a rainy day.
The chai frosting. I died. Chai frosting and honey cake. I was like, my little Sherlockian heart is so full of cake.
Saffron. Oh my God. It was just, all of it.
So, like, it's not just, like, the image of the cake, right? Which already filled us all with joy. But then, like, to have this, like, the second round of complete surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And astonishment.
I think everyone was surprised how good that cake was.
Exactly. And, like, I wonder, because obviously, you know, when we were sort of giving people feedback, everybody was just, you know, saying, this is amazing cake. And it might come across as a little artificial or forced, exactly, but it wasn't. Like,
it
everybody
was
loving this cake. It was just amazing cake. So yeah, that was I was very happy at both points.
I'm gonna put it this way, I don't even like cake. My friends know that around my birthday they don't bring me cake because I do not like cake. I like some kinds of sweets. I like pie very much, berry pies. Sure, like, I would love to have a pie. There are many desserts I enjoy tremendously. I don't like cake at all, to the point that back in the day when I was still working at TGI Fridays, my best friend Lewis and husband Gabriel and our friend Ron went to Safeway because there was this habit that we had at the big old restaurant, TGI Fridays, where anytime it was somebody's birthday and they had to work on their birthday, we would get them a cake. Well, I hate cake, and everyone would have the cake and everyone would, you know, like, pick off of it in the back. So they got a cake at Safeway or something, and they had the person write on the cake, "For Ron, Lewis, and Gabriel, in honor of Lindsay's birthday." because they knew I wasn't going to touch it.
I was like, here you get ice cream.
Yeah. And this cake, man, that is how much I don't like cake. And this cake was outstanding. It was so good.
I mean, it's been really exciting to watch now that the clips are out, the amount of people who are so ecstatic and waiting, because, you know, a lot of people knew that this was something that had happened,
but it was also something that we couldn't talk about. We couldn't show anything. We could talk about it, but like,
it was really hard for the people who were there because they had taken pictures, so many pictures of the cake that they couldn't put on the book face or on the tweets or, you know, on the...
Or anywhere. You know, you couldn't,
anywhere.
We couldn't have it out there. Everybody who was there at the event had signed agreements, non-disclosure agreements. So, you know, and that was sort of a little bit, I mean, that was probably the one headache for us was after the ball and after the weekend, all you kind of want to do is decompress and instead... There was a lot of, like, Lindsay and I having to, like, be online.
We had to whack-a-mole a little bit. So I think that another thing that people are going to really, really enjoy about being able to actually see the ball is how much pure bliss goes into some of the cosplay elements of it, too.
Yeah.
Because... Another problem with them having the cake at the actual BSI dinner was because the BSI does not allow any of our annual meeting to be in any way recorded. It's not recorded. We're not allowed to tweet from it. People do. but, you know, if you're at the dinner, you're not supposed to post pictures. You're not supposed to, you know. And so Mike Whalen, the Wiggins, said predictably to the camera crew that they could piss right off. They did not want the cake, which is not the babe's ethos. We're like, yes, give us cake.
Please show everybody and show the whole world this amazing weekend that you too can come visit. And if you visit, if you're one of the people that listens and thinks, I would do anything to come to the ball every year, like, now you have the ability to do it and see it in your own home.
Yeah, exactly.
Part of that as well.
And I wanted to just mention specifically, like, the reason I brought up cosplay in a terribly inelegant segue was that Maria was dressed so beautifully this year that she made it into the New York Times as well. So let's give the Times a little bit of credit here. The New York Times, of course, the one of the most venerable news reporting bodies in the entire world, I think, and certainly very, very necessary in these dark times. We're great admirers of the New York Times, and they were like, can we come to your party? And we were like, sure. There's going to be a lot of cake stuff going on. And they're like, why? So we told them. And they did this amazing feature. And part of the reason that both the Times and the Cake Boss episode, I think there are two major reasons that they wanted to be at our event. And if you can choose an event to go to during BSI weekend, I encourage you to go to this one without any fear that you will be disappointed. Because there's the element that it's a charity auction for the Disabled American Veterans Trust. It used to be for Wounded Warrior Project. And we just discovered that the Disabled American Veterans Trust, we sort of like the way they divided up the money that comes in. And we've raised almost $40,000 at this point, I think. Is it $37,000?
I think it was, yeah, that was...
It's something like, I think in 6 years, we've raised like 37 grand around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, through this auction. So that was one reason that they wanted to be there was because it's for soldiers, and so that's amazing. But also the cosplay element, really, we have a costume competition. So I think we have the best costumes at our party of any time during the BSI weekend. And I think I can say that with no fear of contradiction.
Yes.
No, absolutely, especially because it's the one platform where we encourage it. And we have a costume, we have other things. None of the other events... you know, people might wear Victorian garb or might have implements or parts of it, but I would definitely argue we're the only one actively who, when you decided it and started pushing for the themes and whatnot, to allow people to say, like, do you have this crazy idea for a Sherlock Holmes outfit that you wanted to show off and wear and be able to do in the community, because it's such a fun part of our culture.
Massively fun.
Be able to say that. I mean, even if it's just that Inverness that you have with the deerstalker in your greasy suit, like, you might wear it, but it might not fit in as place for, like, the whole ensemble at the BSI dinner or the Gillette luncheon or somewhere else, versus we're the kind of platform where, like, absolutely, that's what we want. We want it to be a ball setting. We want it to be a fun costume ball. And we want you to have that crazy idea, as per Maria's amazing costume this year, that you could then put out. So, Maria, what was your costume?
Well, my costume, just sort of explaining that, was born out of, like, listening to what you guys were planning and having no idea what I was going to do. And then it was really, really late and we were talking about stuff, like planning. And then I think it must have been like 3 a.m. where I am. And I was really sleep deprived. And I thought, why ain't I just going as the Grimpen Maria? So just as a pun on the Grimpen Maya. And that was like the first thing I just sort of wrote. And then I thought about it a little bit. And then I think Tim Greer and a few other people just kind of joined me, were like, yes, you have to do it. So I started putting together this costume. So I wore like a moss green dress. With like,
oh, well, you were the green
scarf, exactly, right? So just sort of green stuff on myself. Then I printed out and laminated, you know, like the tour on, you know, sort of the Maya. So also a glowing hound, in the sense, you know, those little glow sticks that where you like crack them and they start glowing in the dark. That's also what I wore. And then in London at the Wellcome Trust, and I'm sure they're everywhere, like in weird. Like museum shops, they have these tiny hands and tiny feet. I used to buy them to make fun of Donald Trump, but then they came in handy because I could use them as body parts, kind of being sucked into them more. So I pinned them to my dress as well. And then Lindsay had some thistles in a flower arrangement at home that was kind of drying up. So I took these and just stuck them in my hair. And thus I was Grimpen Maria. And then I put like a tombstone on the dress as well. So I just basically went as a pun. And once I, like, once I started doing it, I really got into it. Like, it literally started out as a joke of me, like, not having slept and just making stuff up. And then just turned into this kind of thing that was mentioned by the New York Times. It also meant that I won the costume contest, which was beautiful and unexpected. But it also means that the New York Times had to print a retraction specifying.
Yes, because they got it wrong the first time. They said that she came as the Moor.
The Scottish Moor.
The Scottish Moor.
And then a few days later, they actually literally printed a retraction
in the
specifying in the Times, in the New York Times, that it was actually the Grimpen Maya. Which is like the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
You can understand, this is very serious. I mean, for them, because this happens a fair amount that places have to issue corrections, especially these days, because, you know, Maria could have sued.
Yeah.
They did it. For listing her incorrectly. Like, that is technically a lawsuit, because that is not valid reporting. Because they were wrong. So what the media does is that if there's enough fuss online, which there was over the fact that Maria was not what they proclaimed her to be, therefore the Times got wind of it and had to issue a correction, because the reporter who did it found out, oh wait, no, this was incorrectly reported, and I'm really sorry.
It was fake news, guys.
It was totally fake news. But what's also is just striking me now as ironic is because my investiture to the BSI is Rache, right? So it's revenge. So it's sort of like, you know, it's like a whole costume was like foretelling the events of the Saturday, the Friday night during the dinner, when I was kind of, you know, because the Moors kind of, you know, taking revenge on and whoever's evil and ventures out there. So I love, I'm enjoying very much my investiture. It's a beautiful.
We had a truly fabulous time. And as another, you know, just sort of odd media thing that was going on, and you can watch this too. It is on the YouTubes, I believe, and I don't think it's too hard to find, but Voices of America was there, which is a news organization in Russia that is an anti-Russian state, anti-Putin propaganda organization that tries to present America in a more accurate light than apparently we are often portrayed over in Russian media. So they were there and they wanted to sort of just record some footage saying, hey, look at these people. They love Sherlock Holmes, because before the Iron Curtain fell, really, the one of the iconic and most popular and beloved heroes over in Russia and, you know, Eastern Bloc countries was the Len film version of Sherlock Holmes with Vitaly Solomon and Vasily Dyadnov. And they are wonderful. You can also watch those on the YouTubes. But people love Sherlock Holmes in Russia. So there was also, you know, there's the Times, there's this cake, and there's this Russian anti-propaganda organization that's been going since, like, the 60s or something, that's also, like, full of history. And the babes are just standing there like, well, I guess that's what this is now. We made a party, and some people came.
We made a party, and the news is here to film the paparazzi once in.
It was so funny. Like, it was surreal, but also, like, I'm still surprised how well that nobody fell over a cable, that nobody, you know, that just,
yeah.
Like, things went the normal way. But there were just more people around, and there was a cake, and there were a few cameras, and there were a few interviews, and, you know, people were a little more busy than usual. But just also, like, kudos to you guys, you know, like, organizing all of this, because, like, I think everyone who was there didn't recognize or didn't realize, like, how much work had went into this, like, initially, like, all of the things that had to be organized beforehand. Because everyone just enjoyed the day so much.
Thank God.
Yeah. And, like, and that, like, kudos to you, because, I mean, that's, you know, that's how it's supposed to go. That, you know,
yeah.
Nobody actually panics.
Tiffany and I are both very, very large proponents of the principle. The more you, if you can do it beforehand, then do.
Stage management is a awesome skill, and people who are actual stage managers, I have to give you all the credit for, but it helps a lot, you know,
mm-hmm.
It can make it so that, you know, it's the do not observe the people behind the curtain.
You want to make it look easy.
Yeah.
You want to make it look easy. And everybody else should have an awesome, easy time. And if you do everything before and know where everyone's going to stand and how it goes, then at the end of the day, it goes relatively smoothly, even if, you know, even if people don't, you know, see all of the headache and everything else before that. Like, that's the idea. Nobody else should know any of that.
Yeah.
You just want to make sure everybody.
You didn't need to know how the sausage is made. Or the cake.
Or the cake, exactly. Except everybody wants to know how this cake was made.
Yeah. And I think that the cake making process is probably more palatable than the sausage making process.
Maybe.
Now you can actually go and see how the cake was made. At
yes.
least a little clip of the how to make a Sherlock Holmes cake.
That's that fun. Was so much fun for us too, because, you know, we weren't there obviously when they were making the cake, because we weren't allowed to see what it looked like.
Yes, and like shout out to Ralph from the Cake Boss team, who was wearing a Deerstalker
yes.
while creating the face, like the bust of Sherlock Holmes. I think it made out of molding, like modeling chocolate and fondant or something. So that was an amazing bust of Sherlock Holmes on top of shoulders made out of cake, on top of the book made out of cake. So that was just like a piece of art, and all of this being done wearing a Deerstalker. Yes.
It was my Are we allowed to say that? Am I allowed to say that?
Say what?
It was my Deerstalker.
It was your Deerstalker, yeah. So he
kept because you left it at the...
Oh, seriously?
I had you leave it at the studio.
Because they had wanted some Sherlockian things, and they were like, what's authentic and what's real? And
I left them one of Gabe's pipes, and you left them...
My Deerstalker, my little capelet. I have a little Argyle Sherlock, like a little like femme Sherlock capelet. And my
mom wanted like real materials to be able to model it after.
Right. And I brought my Deerstalker, which is...
So that is Tiffany's Deerstalker.
I will say it was kind of funny when I got a couple messages after it was finally released. The little couplet, and I had a couple people message me going, am I crazy, or is that your Sherlock Holmes outfit they're wearing?
And I was like, oh, no, I made that. Not the Deerstalker. I guess that would be mine.
I forgot about that. That is a great, like, insider sort of, like, thing to know about. So thank you for bringing that up. Cause, yeah, that's a cool detail. Because we left them with some physical props to work with.
We left.
And then they ended up nerding out with them, clearly, from the footage that were...
They probably had more fun, I think, with them than I do.
Well, that's dubious, but they certainly did have a great time. It was awesome.
I'm glad that the hat fit him. That was my...
No, it was cute. Grace, Grace was amazing. Grace from Cake Boss. Yeah. She really helmed the whole thing. And they work as a family. It's a family business. And when she brought us the cakes, she was so gracious. Back to the time when she was first talking to us about what we wanted for the cake. She was such a nice person to talk to. And clearly this family is really busy making cake for people. And they were really just a pleasure to work with the whole time. We are revealing on this episode, we are patting ourselves on the back quite a bit for how well the ball went last year. And we want to thank absolutely everyone who attended, everyone who donated to the cause, be it via goods or services. And we would like to reveal to you the theme of next year's ball.
So, Lindsay, am I going to have to make another hat to auction off for this one? Is that what
you are?
I think it's going to have to happen. Really big.
Really big. Big hat. That's your first hint. So. It was a special kind of drum roll. Because we are going to be doing the daintiest filly on the turf next year.
Yay! There should be like a horse.
All the Sherlockian race horses, all of your crazy Sherlock Holmes My Little Pony crossovers, all of your fabulous My Fair Lady inspired giant dresses. And
who's the horse? Who's the horse who, Jude Law took care of in the Granada. The Shop's Gold place. You can come as Jude Law. You can be Jude Law. That's fine.
He can also be in charge of the dangerous parts of a horse, which are the front and the back, according to Robert Downey Jr.
If Bob Stack doesn't come as a horse's ass, I'm going to cry. Our friend Bob Steck every year comes in this just amazing, incredible cosplay. And we did a pajama party theme one year. And that was the daintiest thing in a dressing gown. So the daintiest thing in a dressing gown was our pajama party. And everybody just went wacko with these Oscar Wildean dressing gowns and sort of lounge outfits and smoking gowns and whatnot. It was louche in the extreme. But in addition to it being louche, a lot of other people were just like, hey, I'm gonna wear these pajamas and somehow make it work. My best cosplay ever in the history of any, I'm not a cosplayer. So my best cosplay to date was at that one because I found a pair of snakeskin pajamas on the internet. And I was like, snakeskin pajamas. And they were not that expensive. So I ordered them. They fit. And I fashioned a bell pull out of a very long braided pretty cord and a tassel at the end of it. And I wore the bell pull on my head. So I was walking around being a speckled band. That was a good time. But Bob, who won the costume contest that year, I think.
He won part of it.
Yeah, he won. No, he must have. He came in a pink butt-footed bunny suit, like a three-year-old would wear to bed, and it was magical. So, Bob, we're looking at you for this year. Daintiest filly on the turf. We had to actually, Tiffany, very kindly, ever since the second year, I think it was the second year, has agreed to be one of the esteemed judges of the costume competition alongside Mr. Stephen Rothman of the Baker Street Journal and Mr. Curtis Armstrong of stage theater, film, and television fame, and noted renowned Sherlockian as well. and Wodehousian. But Tiffany got fired from the costume competition after the first year because she's too good. I was like, oh.
I mean, there's been some pretty spectacular costumes. I'm pretty sure it would have been okay, but I'm happy to get to see them all now and judge them and have to help wrangle that part of the event because it's so much fun to actually get to watch other people enjoy.
They get so creative with it, and I can't wait to see what people are going to do with the daintiest filly on the turf because there's going to be something completely unexpected where they show up, and then you have to stare at them for a second, and then you're like, oh my God.
I see what you did there.
You are the dish of curry with the sleeping powder in it. How did you do that?
Somebody better have boots with cow hooves.
Oh my god,
that would be fantastic. Yeah.
Yes. All of the things.
So
all of it
is always great fun. So if any of you have never gone before but kinda wanna go, I think we can promise you it'll be an amazing evening. Like I have been going for the last I think 4 years and it was always amazing. Even if a lot of work goes into it behind the scenes, but I think everyone who's a guest has always immensely enjoyed themselves. So if anybody's in doubt, just come and, it's for a good cause and you can auction off stuff if you have stuff lying around or you can bid on stuff if you want to have stuff lying around.
Yes.
And just... <Yes. Yeah. laughs>
And both of those actions help us in the extreme.
Exactly. And there's always
you can make
things.
Stuff if you yes. want us to have stuff. And you can make stuff so that other people can buy stuff. And then they have the stuff you made.
Yes.
Pretty phenomenal.
Yes.
Yeah.
So do come along. It's definitely the best party.
What are the dates of BSI Weekend and Tier Ladies? It's the 7th through the...
Yes, it's the second week of January.
Yeah, okay. So we're always on the Thursday night at 8 p.m. sharp. Excited, we're going to have to start getting ready.
Yes.
This is around the time every year, honestly, because I coordinate the whole thing. I start worrying about it in August every year because, now's the time when I start trying to find original artwork and, the doodads that we can sell for charity. And we're really happy to do it, and we're honored by everybody who has put in their time and effort and creativity and their presence into helping us.
So it's going to be wonderful. We look forward to seeing all of you in January. Start thinking about your outfits now and your hats.
Yes.
All the
correct.
Hats.
All the hats.
Hats need to be on point.
And tune into the episode if you're in the UK this month, I think. And if you're in here in the US, you're going to be getting a Christmas gift, and it'll be awesome. And it should be probably closer to December, but that's pretty close at this point. It's just a couple months. So, and until then, you can check out the clip at the TLC UK YouTube channel, and they've gone ahead and put that up there so everyone can look no matter where you are. There's no sort of requirements on that. It's just open on their channel on YouTube.
Thanks for being here, folks.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2 to 1?